there, beautiful people. Welcome back to Fantide, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am entertainment journalist, editor, world changer, social curator, authoress, times two, and all around bad bitch, Travell Anderson. And yes, Jared is still not answering my phone calls. And so that means that I get carte blanche, okay? So in the passenger side of her best friend's ride this week is my sister from another mister. She is the eponymous Bianca. Is it eponymous? No, mononymous. Mononymous. She's the mononymous Bianca. Y'all have heard me mention plenty of times on the show. Bianca Carter, welcome to Fantime.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here. I literally told Travell, like, am I not famous enough to be on this podcast? Okay, I'm excited.
You are absolutely famous because all of the people listening already basically know who you are. But in case folks haven't listened to those episodes in which I've talked about your brilliance, do you want to tell the people a little bit about who you are, type of work that you do?
Sure. I am a career philanthropist at this point. I've been working in philanthropy in New York City for the last 8 years. Right now, the work I'm doing is focused on housing and homelessness, which I feel really passionately about as a person with lived experience. So I manage about $7 million in
big
grants.
Big money.
And that represents local nonprofit organizations in the city who we've given that money to do extraordinary work to try to end homelessness in New York City. So I'm really proud of that work. I'm really excited about it. That's the day job.
Listen, okay, a bad bitch, okay, in case y'all didn't know, all right? She out here working in community and stuff, all right? Shout out to you. Coming up on the show today, Bianca will be with me the whole time. And because she's here, our Fantai is going to be all about the friendship.
Hey.
Uh-huh. Okay. But first, we've got our Pass the Popcorn segment, okay? And the series hosted by one-time unapologetic fracker RuPaul is in the seventh season of its All-Stars spinoff. And this go-around, it's all former winners competing. Competing for the crown. I should say for the people that Bianca discovered Drag Race in the pandemic. And rightfully so, she now is, you know, obsessed. And so I thought that this could be a great pass the popcorn conversation for you and I. Because we're, what, 4 or 5 episodes into the season. And I would love to hear, we should say that the queens that are competing this go around are, let me see if I remember them, Monet Exchange, Shea Coulee, Evie Oddly, Jada Essence Hall, you named the black people first, obviously, Raja, the iconic Raja, the Vivian, who is season one winner of UK, the weird one, what's the weird one's name, Jinx Monsoon, and... Oh, the one I never talk about. What's her name? Trinity.
The Tuck.
That one, yes. Trinity the Tuck. So those are the contestants.
I'm so impressed you got through all 8 of those. Round of applause.
Me too, because I'd be forgetting some of them white ones. I'm not even going to lie to
you.
But Bianca, who are you rooting for? Who's pulling away in the competition for you this season?
Well, I want to first say that the competition is fierce. Honey is so good. Every episode has been really good. Every challenge, every runway.
Well, not every episode. Now that the judge,
yeah,
what is it, the fairy tale judge?
Fairy tale justice episode was flat. But what I'm saying is that the performance among all 8 of the queens that are in this season has been really consistent. Mm-hmm. Like all of them are strong.
You know,
in like regular seasons of Drag Race, you might have ones that, you know, they're clearly not supposed to be there. They're clearly there so they could get cut. It does not feel like that this season. So I'm pulling for the iconic sponge dress down Monet Exchange. I love her. She's a hometown queen. Shout out to Brooklyn. She also was a 90s baby just like me. She's literally only like a few months older than me. I love her so much. I think her drag is New York the house down, like the kids say.
I can't.
But I love her. I'm rooting for her. But I will say that Evie Oddly is growing on me. I just feel like her drag has elevated so much since she won her face is always painted down. She is interpreting every challenge in her own oddly way. I really feel like people are sleeping on her. She's doing her thing.
Well, I don't think people are sleeping on her. I think she ain't winning no damn challenges. That's just the facts of the matter. Because you're right. The competition is so high, right? But, like, the purpose, like, the theme of this season is you have to win these challenges so that you can get a legendary legend star. Mm-hmm. And then the top four people who have the most legendary legend stars at the end are the ones that go to the finals, right? And so she's good. She's doing what she does. I agree with every sentiment that you have laid out. When she is up against some of the others, is she bringing it?
I
don't know.
I think she is. But also, like, if you are a part of the Roger fandom.
Wow.
Roger finally got a star. And the girl's been saying she was supposed to get a star since episode one. So I guess it really depends on what fandom you're a part of.
I completely agree with that. I will say that, to me, the only challenge that Raja should have won is the challenge that Raja won.
Agreed. I agree.
She also was great, similar to Evie Oddly, right? Great at what they do. Great to see them elevated in the ways that they're elevated now. But, like, when you've got Jinx's weird ass...
Yeah.
And I now use that as a compliment, not a pejorative,
for sure.
To be clear. When you've got Jinx being Jinx and knocking it out the park almost every single week.
Listen,
when you have Jinx turning it out every single week for the most part, when you have Shay turning it out every week almost for the most part, when you have Monet doing very well in just about every challenges, right? Like, it is tough. But, you know, this, I think we're, like I said, 4 or 5 episodes into Drag Race. If you have not checked it out, this is a great season to do so because the competition, as Bianca said, is high all the way. I'm sure we will have some other recap near the end of the season. But we're gonna go to a quick break, all right? And when we come back, we will get into our fan time. Whether it's a warm cup of coffee, basking in warm sunlight, or listening to a sexy, sexy story, guess what? Pleasure is all around us. And with Dipsy, your sanctuary is awaiting. Escape into a world where pleasure is your only priority. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, sexy audio stories designed by women for women. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and characters, no matter who you're into or what turns you on. Listen, they got stuff for the they-thems, the he-hems, the she-hers, and everybody else in between. You can find stories about that intriguing coworker with a British accent or hooking up with your hot yoga instructor. They even have stories designed specifically for your zodiac sign. Stand up. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/fanti. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/fanti. dipsystories.com/fanti. Our podcast is also brought to you by the folks over at Microdose Gummies. Okay, I can confirm, because I saw Jarrett over the weekend, that he is indulging in his microdose gummies, okay? He is on his creative hiatus. It has helped him. He says, here's the thing, y'all. He be on his microdose gummies, having his little creative situation going on, and he will text me these different ideas about, like, segments we should do on the podcast or topics that we should be doing, because that's what the microdose gummies do for him. When I do the microdose gummies, okay, they just help me calm down after a very, very long day. We know you've heard of microdosing because you listen to this show. And if not, just know that all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and perform better. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. All right. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code FANTI to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description. But again, that's microdose.com, code FANTI. Welcome back, beautiful people. So the great songwriters once said, what about your friends? Hey. Are they gonna be low down? Will they ever be around? Or will they turn their back on you? I don't know. That last line, I think I fucked it up. But that was back in 1992, okay? When I was still a young whippersnapper. And now in 2022, the year of our Audre Lorde and Savior, Beyonce Janelle's Carter Christ, the house down boot.
Giselle.
Everybody is trying to be the damn Golden Girls, okay? And as I mentioned, Bianca is one of my besties. So in asking her to be on the pod, I thought talking about friendship would be a great topic for us because, one, we've been in this thing for over a decade. I see that you have gone into the script and been explicit to say 12 years, Bianca, okay?
I just wanted to let the people know, okay?
And you know what? I get it. I understand it. So one, we've been friends for 12 years. But also two, you know, we've had some time, okay? Some, I don't want to call them ups and downs. I'll just say different levels to our friendship that we, you know, continue to access, you know, as the years go on. So to get us started, I figured it would be great for us to tell our origin story as friends. And it starts at a One Morehouse in Spelman Colleges in Atlanta, Georgia. Bianca was you were a sophomore.
Well,
or you were becoming a junior.
Yeah, because we met over the summer. So technically,
right.
This thing started at a summer program in Kentucky. That's where this started.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's when we met. First of all, it was only a handful of black folks there. So you know how we all kind of congregate to each other.
We got to tell them. It was the Shepherd Poverty Alliance, yes. Okay? We both were Bonner Scholars. The Bonner Scholar Program is a program through the Bonner Foundation, which is based in New Jersey, that basically helps support students through school by having them, like, give back to the community. So we got scholarship money to do community service to help pay our motherfucking education. And there was this program that we did through Bonner called the Shepherd Poverty Alliance that brought all of these different Bonner scholars and other folks. I think it was other folks, or was it just Bonners? It doesn't matter. But all of these folks we convened in Kentucky at Berea College. That's where we started. And then we all fanned out to our different locations. And like you were saying, Bianca, all of the black people, and by all of the black people, we mean largely the Morehouse and Spelman contingent,
mm-hmm.
But there were a few others from other institutions that, you know, we also latched onto. Go.
Shout out to Barry. That's my girl. She was there too.
Yes.
But,
Nana.
Yes, all of them. But basically, we started talking and then we realized we both go to school right next door to each other. That would be cool. And so actually you were based that summer in Baltimore. I was based that summer in Boston. And so we didn't see each other again until like the end of the program where we're all doing kind of our debrief thing. And then for me, it was like, we're friends. Clearly we're friends. We took selfies. Like we did this forced labor over the summer together. Like we're going to be besties. We're going to go back to school and just hang out all the time. That is not what happened. Travell is a lot more, and we're going to get into this, careful about being friends, or the F word, as they put it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been like that. I'm very liberal with the word, or at least at the beginning. Now we're going to talk about, you know, besties and that sort of thing later. But I'm like, I like you. You like me. We clicked immediately. Like we're friends. I don't understand why we're not friends. What's going on here? And so we're back in school and I see Travell and I'm like, hey, and Travell's like, yeah, you know, hey. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then, so I saw Travell every now and then, occasionally. We were both doing Bonner things, so we ran into each other every now and then. And then I would say the next real time that we, like, connected is when Travelle really led joint programming between the two schools for If You Really Knew Me. How did that ever come to be anyway? And you invited me to be a part of it, but I didn't know where it came from.
So If You Really Knew Me is something that I, if I'm being honest, I stole it from this MTV show that they used to have called Challenge Day, I think, or something like that. And basically, it was this program that went into these high schools and they selected, I think it was usually 100 students from like different sectors of the school to like come together. And it was supposed to be like this anti-bullying, like build connection with people type of thing. And so I came up with this idea to do it for, you know, for the AUC, for Morehouse and Spelman. And you know, we had some Clark Atlanta people there too. Shout out to y'all. But it was mainly for, you know, Morehouse and Spelman. And I needed facilitators. I needed people who I thought were emotionally capable of potentially going the places that some of those conversations would take us. And you were one of the people that I thought could do it. And in the process of, I don't want to call it training, but it was kind of training, in the process of like making sure that all of the people, and we should shout out, I want to shout out Donald Gillis, who was part of that team, Cheryl Felicia Means, Dr. Means, who was part of that team, Ahmaud Barber helped out on that team.
The photographer, Ahmaud Barber, been doing the thing.
Who I've mentioned on the show before, AB plus DM Studio. Matthew Robinson was a part of that team. Courtney Stewart, I believe her last name, was part of that team. There was also some fun, was it Jaleel? Jaleel, I don't know Jaleel's last name. Let me stop lying. I was going to say Jaleel White, but that seems like a celebrity.
Steve Urkel.
Anyway. Right. Okay, there we go.
So basically, like, Jaleel, we like did it with each other before we facilitated it with this large group. And we was crying, child. We was holding each other down and like really digging deep in some of the lived experiences we had all had. Some things we had in common, other things we just shared deep empathy for. And so once we went through that process, then we all went to go get some food and then we were like ready to conquer the world. And then we facilitated.
And we've been tethered since then, I guess.
For sure. I mean, I think we created a group chat after that and we used to check in with each other every morning for months. Like we were just like deeply like in it after that. But I would say that was the beginning of what felt like a deeper bond with Travelle. And then, and we did that program, I want to say twice while I was still a student there, because I was a year ahead of you. And then I think you guys did it again the year after I left, after I graduated. But after I graduated, we stayed in touch and we, every time Travelle was in.
Oh, wait, one second, Bianca. I do, you know, want to talk my shit a little bit and say that that program won program of the year, okay?
Rightfully so.
Resident advisors, okay? And if I'm not mistaken, did I do that my first year or my second year? I can't remember.
I think you did it your first year, yeah.
Because I think that was also the program that led to me being, you know, selected as resident advisor of the year as well. So I just wanted to talk my shit, but you could keep going, Bianca.
Yeah, that was a really important segue for us to just do, apparently. But so we stayed in touch and I saw Travelle every time they came to New York. And then, so that's years and years and years of checking in and you're cool and I'm cool and that sort of thing. But it still, for me, didn't get to that deep emotional work until COVID. And so everyone knows I live in New York City and it was really hit in a significant way at the very beginning of COVID. Well, the rest of the country was trying to decide whether or not it was still real. And the supplies were really hard to come by and I started making calls to folks all over the country and just like, do you got some masks? Do you got some hand sanitizer? Like, could you send me some? Like, what's going on? And Travelle like really helped me like be able to access some things that we needed. And then I think by consequence of both of us, just our life slowing down in a significant way, we just found each other talking to each other more. We started playing spades online together. We'd just be talking while we're playing. And then it felt like this person who I've been friends with for all these years was really opening up and letting me in. And I teased them a lot about it. them a lot a about it bit. Because I was just like, I don't want to say it. I don't want them to know that it's happening. But I would say really in the last 2 years, I'd already considered you one of my closest friends, a bestie. But I think then you started considering me a bestie too. And when I came to your birthday celebration last year in California, after I talked you into having one for your 30th birthday, I think that kind of cemented it. So since then, it's like everything. And I don't even want to talk about
it. They say if it's up, then it's stuck, as the kids say.
That's what they say. So now we up there and it's everything. So I love it. I mean, you're an amazing person.
Yes, I am. And so... Okay, let's get into the discussion. That's the background on our friendship. It will come into play shortly. We're going to do more of a complex and complicado approach to this, but I thought it would be like really interesting to have a mixed conversation on friendship because, as you kind of forecasted, I'm someone who I don't use that F word lightly, okay? There are people that I have known for a very long time who I do not call my friend. Yeah. And you are right, Bianca. I feel like I started calling you friend before the pandemic, to be clear.
Oh, thank God.
But, but I am just very intentional about the words that I use. There are only, you know, few people that I will use the word bestie or best friend for. There are a few people, you know, more than just bestie, but there are, you know, a couple handfuls of people that I will say friend. And then, you know, a lot of other people are colleagues, their peers, their acquaintances. There's all these other words that we can use for people. And friend doesn't have to be one of them because for me, when I call somebody a friend, it relates to what I feel like one is like my role and my place in their life, but also what their role and their place is in my life. If I can't call you and know that you're gonna hold me down, and when I say hold me down, I don't necessarily mean agree with me, but I mean I can trust that whatever you're saying to me about whatever the circumstances might be is with my
best interest at heart.
Best interest at heart. Thank you for those words. That's how I classify friends. And so to get us started, I would love to hear you, Bianca, talk about like what to you makes a good friend?
Yeah, I think that honesty, integrity, loyalty, availability. For me, like, I don't really consider it a friendship unless there's some sort of like emotional connection. That's what is the marking of a friendship for me. And then like, it's always really clear to me if I'm really close to someone, if I can tell them the truth. I think that, especially as a Black woman navigating life about how I think people want to see me versus who I actually am. So for my real friends, like my closest friends, like those folks, like they know me for real, and I have no hesitancy to like tell them the truth, even when I'm like dead ass wrong. Like that's a really an indicator of a good friend for me. And then I would say, like, lastly, I think that being able, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but being able to navigate conflict or disagreements and having strong communication is another telltale sign of a strong friendship.
Well, let's jump right on in there now. Conflict, navigating conflict among friends. I don't recall you and I having had conflict. But maybe I don't fucking know. My memory's trash.
So we don't have conflict in a traditional sense. When I was saying conflict, I was talking about like something in the friendship that needs to be worked out. That has never happened between you and I. But we have conflict in terms of like differences of opinions all the time. We just be talking shit. We just be going back and forth. And I like that. Like it never feels like there has to be a winner per se. Like, you said something and it has to be right, or I said something and it has to be right. Just like, child, we just gonna agree to disagree then. And it just is what it is. And I think
Period.
That's a really beautiful place to be. But we've never actually had like conflict in our relationship that or something that needed healing. So I know that some people think that if you haven't had that moment, then maybe you're not real friends. But I think that goes to the whole like, I don't know, Black folks always feel like they have to go through something for it to mean something. And that's a whole separate conversation.
Listen, I know that's right. Well, one of the things that you mentioned was like, you know, our friendship is not necessarily one where we always agree. There's no not necessarily conflict, but we don't always agree. Mm-hmm. And that leads me to the point about like, you know, can you be friends with someone you don't agree with? And for me, in my head, there's like a little star, a little asterisk that will lead us to talking about what do we mean when we say you don't agree with someone? Like, what is the type of topic that we are talking about? Because, right, more and more in my life, I'm not interested in being in any sort of community with someone who, for example, whose political ideologies, right, does not make space for my humanity and how I show up.
Right.
Right. Actually, I remember having someone who I considered to be close. I may or may not use the F word.
See how for hard them it is, guys? This time you see this period. In real time.
but we were close, and he was a Republican. Mm-hmm. Like an open Republican, y'all. And one of his main like reasons for being a Republican, conservative, whatever, was he did not believe in choice, in the right, in what is it, the right to choose. Mm-hmm. He did not believe in the right to choose. Mm-hmm. And the abortions and all of that stuff. But he and I would say, were like fairly close at a particular time. This was as I was, you know, unfolding into my fabulously queer and eventually trans
bad bitchness
self. Period. Right. And so I would love to hear you talk about like when you talk one, this idea of like being friends with people you disagree with in particular, because I always feel like folks always talk about like that echo chamber idea that like if you surround yourself with people, you know, of a certain type, then it just becomes an echo chamber. How do you think about that in your friends and friend group?
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, I don't want a bunch of like yes people around me. So I totally get the not someone who's just gonna checkmark everything and never challenge you or offer you to push you further or offer you a different perspective. I totally hear what you're saying too about safety. I think safety is a very particular thing. Like I don't want anyone who's transphobic, and I don't want to be partnered with anybody who's fatphobic, right? As a person who is, you know, shaking all this jelly. I just feel like
period.
Ultimately,
slurp.
Oh, you gotta
strawberry and grape, honey.
Okay. I got 32 flavors in this bootylicious. Okay, let me stop.
I can't.
So basically, I feel like, so I have a friend, a good friend, who is a hotep. Like, absolutely
oh, no.
is a hotep. And so, would I ever partner with this person? Like beyond a friendship, like an actual partner mm-hmm. relationship? Absolutely not. Like, he just wants me to be barefoot and pregnant. I'm not fit to do that. I just heard I'm making money, okay? I can't be doing all of that. But as a friend, it's fine, right? So like ultimately, like I do think that there's levels to this. And to your point earlier mm-hmm. about like not everybody's a bestie, I do think I hold my best friends, and we're gonna talk about this a little bit. I have three best friends, and I hold my best friends to a different standard, or it looks different mm-hmm. than like mm-hmm. all the other friends, you know. And it's hard to really segment that out in a way out loud that makes sense. But ultimately, like, you know who your ride or dies are. You know who, you know, you get brunch quarterly. You know, like, you know what it is, right? Like, everybody knows who those people are in their lives. I will say this, which is, it's not specific to me, but it's important to me that I'm also a person who doesn't have a strong relationship with my blood relatives. So I would say also my three best friends, of which one of them is you, as you know, also kind of ride this like familial line for me that is very gray that I still haven't quite sussed out yet. Something I'm processing with my therapist, quite frankly, about what that looks like around boundaries and expectations and that sort of thing. That's very muddled for me. I'm still figuring that out. I think basically like the way I would describe it kind of high level is I could marry any of the three of y'all. Like if any of y'all was just like, and I am a married person and my partner has feelings about this, but honestly, like, I feel like we're so close and so connected. I feel like my best friends are my soulmate. So ultimately, like I could be with them. Like I'd be fine. Like that's not the way the cookie crumbled because they all didn't want me. I offered, but
wow, wow.
But ultimately, wow. So I know that I'm not the only person who has, and we talk a lot about with queer folks, especially how their really expansive definition of family and chosen family and that sort of thing. This most closely probably mirrors that.
I love that. Okay, so now I wanna go to the what I'm considering to be the anti side of this, which is about bad friends.
Yeah,
and you know. I am a recovering bad friend, okay? I am a recovering bad friend.
What does that mean, Travelle?
I am working on it. What does it mean to be a recovering bad friend?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm a very independent person. It's just, that's just the lot in life that I have been given.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't choose it, but baby, she's turning it, all right? And because of that, right, the types of things that folks might turn to friends for, I historically have not felt a need for.
Is it that you don't turn to friends for those things or you don't turn to anybody for those things?
I do it for myself. She's a working girl, working 9 to 5. Anyway.
So then why do you think that makes you a bad friend, though, if that's is consistent with everybody and not just with your friends?
Because the prevailing definition of friends and the prevailing way that folks identify friendships does not make space for how I see the necessities or lack thereof of another individual.
So you're saying that because you don't lean on people, then people might not think you're a good friend?
Lean on me.
I can't.
Yes. That is, and I'm not saying think, right? Like I have been told that I am not a good friend or have not been the best friend because of, you know, various things. And a lot of it amounts to, you know, me not being the one to reach out and initiate, you know, outreach or phone calls or checking in.
Yeah.
A lot of it is me, you know, to be quite honest, like most of my friends, do not live in my city.
No, that's valid.
They do not live in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
They do not live on my coast.
Right.
Right? And in an attempt to express the complications therein, that has not been received well by folks on the other end who look at those as excuses. Right?
That's so and I interesting. Get it. For the record,
I get it though.
We did not have this conversation. Like, Travelle had another friend. It's not me. There's no subtle shade happening here. And I think this is important though. And I think it's not uncommon for college educated folks, right? People who went to college outside of their homes. So we met in Kentucky, but we went to school in Atlanta, and neither one of us were from Atlanta. So when we're thinking about life beyond college and making friendships there and trying to maintain those relationships, it does mean that it's going to be different and long distance and trying to figure out what that looks like in our real lives after we've left that, you know, particular bubble. Really, college is a bubble, right? So trying to figure out what that's like. So I think we very briefly lived in New York together. You were there for like a summer, right?
A summer.
Yeah. So
literally.
It was like very brief time. But that's funny. I don't think we've ever had that conversation.
We have not.
I think also like no shade, like with the way that our relationship was before, like you weren't, you know what I'm saying? So my expectations for you weren't the same. Like I was like, oh, well, did I ever feel like Travell will never call me and reach out? I felt that way for sure. But I also appreciated that if I called you or if I reached out, you always answered.
I think one of the things that's important to say, right, when we're talking about friendship is that, like, your friendships aren't going to look the same with everyone.
Absolutely not. You got to meet people where they are.
Yeah, and because some people just don't have the capacity or the wherewithal to show up in those ways. Now, that being said, I do believe that you have the right to remove somebody.
For sure.
Who is not showing up in the ways that you need. You get to decide
what works for you. Right. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yes.
You get to remove a person who's not showing up in the ways that you want or desire them to show up, especially if you have articulated to them the ways that you need them to show up. Now, some of y'all out here
ain't talking. You're
not communicating.
Some of y'all out here,
you just expecting people to know how you want them to show up for you,
right.
But you're not telling them.
Right.
So now how you holding them accountable forward?
Right.
All right.
That's so true. Listen,
come on now.
One of my other bestie, Brooke, and she says this all the time that we also met in school. All my besties I met in school. Shout out to the to Spellhouse. But Brooke will tell you, she tells the story all the time about how for her, she was like, we're friends and we're fine. And I felt like she was kind of flaky, you know, inconsistent. And I told her straight up, I was like, are we friends or not? Friends for me looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on with you. And I think in order for us to be friends, I need you to show up for me like this. And she heard me. She resented it, but she heard me and she stepped up, and because she felt like it was important enough to her to keep and maintain our friendship. So she wanted to be the kind of friend that I told her I needed, and neither one of us have looked back. So we've been friends as long as you and I have been friends. So we're both glad that we figured that out. And that was kind of like an example of a conflict and being able to navigate that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She has no regrets about it, but she hated the conversation. She brings it up every chance she gets.
It's a tough conversation, right? Which is why I think people don't have it.
Right.
Especially Black folks, queer folks, Black women, femmes, you know, trans folks. I feel like we don't have those conversations. One, because it requires one to be vulnerable.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Exposed.
It requires to say, I need this thing and you are not providing it. And I would love it if you can, you know? I feel like that's very hard. I would love to hear, and I'll actually go first, about a time that you lost a friend and what you learned from it. And I will say that, you know, again, I was, as I said, you know, I historically haven't been the best person about, like, reaching out and inquiring, you know, within the lives of people that I have considered to be friends. And, you know, a lot of my outreach was always, it was inconsistent, you know, and that's probably putting it nicely, right? And so one of the times I inconsistently texted someone who was a really, really close friend, particularly when I was at Morehouse and in the immediate years following, I texted him. Baby, when I tell you, he responded to me and he said, I don't consider you to be a friend no more.
Mm.
And baby, when I tell you, my gut went into my pinky toe.
Okay, so are we being honest? We're being honest on the pod about how you felt about that? Because when you told me this story, you were just like, all's well that ends well.
Well, because all is well that ends well. But what I'm saying is that the actual reading of that text message, I was like, oh.
It hurt.
Like, yeah. Okay. I was like, oh. But then I was also, again, like, listen, I did not show up for you in the ways that you wanted me to show up for you. I did not show up in the ways that you want your friends, the people you call friends, to show up for. And you are removing me from your life? Okay. All is well that ends well, because I respect that shit.
Yeah.
Right?
What did you learn from that?
I learned that I needed to do a better job of understanding the needs of the people that I consider and call friends.
Got it.
And for me, it's also about, you know, one, making the space for an individual to like tell me what they need, but also just like opening up my eyes and like doing my sociologist thing, my journalist thing, and like observing. Like, I feel like I have learned how to be the friend that you need by watching. In addition to you telling me, yeah. right? But also by watching and realizing that, like, oh, this is the type of situation where, like, there is no choice but to show up. You know, you can't send no money. You can't, you know, because I'm good to send a couple coins. I am that girl. I am that girl. No, I am the rich auntie in my head.
Hey.
But like sometimes it's not about sending the money, even though sending money and giving up my hard earned coins for someone is how I show
that's significant.
My love.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about love languages now. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yep. That's how I show my love mm-hmm. and my care. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, they don't care about the fucking money.
Right.
Right.
Or you they can give me the money. Emotional. It still doesn't feel like you love me. I'll take the money.
Right.
But it doesn't feel like
they
you
want
love
the
me.
Emotional.
Yeah.
I feel like you are one of those people, right? You want the emotional connection. You want demonstrations of loyalty and of support that go beyond, you know, a greenback. Yeah. Right. I had to just be more present and aware. But then also, I think, start articulating to people what I can and what I cannot do.
That's real. Did you feel like after that happened that you had to hold on tighter or be more aware of the relationships you had? Were you afraid to lose any other friendships or concerned that any of the other people that you consider friends maybe also had that challenge or were looking at you in that way?
I think for me, what I decided to do was to just be more intentional in the people that I call friends and in the people that call me friends.
Got it.
Right? And by being more intentional, I mean, okay, maybe I need to do, let me send the text message this time. Let me make the call. Let me, you know, go help plan and execute a birthday trip to San Diego for someone, right?
It was like, amazing.
like those are the things that like I think about, like, and also as you're saying, like learning how to love the people that I say that I love.
Right.
Right. And, you know, figuring out ways to do that. And so like now, you know, I'd say my friend group overall, I'd say it's about 5 to 8 people.
Well, before we dig into that, let me make sure I also answer the question that you asked around like
yes.
having lost a friend. And so this happened to me in 2020. I mean, we know like we were all going through COVID. It was a rough time. And I lost a friend that I'd had for a really long time. And I think when I look back at it, it was just a lot of miscommunication and assumptions that were being made on both ends. And I think both of us were hurt and didn't know how to articulate that hurt because we had never had a conflict before. And I think also we let other people get in our ears about things and involved other people and maybe we shouldn't have. And it took me over a year to kind of heal from, because I really was heartbroken that that friendship ended. I think ultimately it needed to end because we had gotten to a place where it was irreconcilable. It didn't have to get there, but it eventually got to a place where I just, the path forward was, it was impossible. But what I learned from that relationship is to be more honest about, well, one, to stop making assumptions altogether, because I think like we literally are just making our an ass out of ourselves. And two was to get real honest about needs. And I think I'm also an independent person, but for different reasons than you are.
I-N-D-E-P-E.
Didn't we do this again? I feel like we did this already.
You know what I mean?
I can't.
No, I did a different song.
Oh, right. Yeah, I guess. Okay, so I think that I just needed to get really comfortable with being really, really honest and asking for the things that I needed. And it is really hard to be that exposed. Like I'm emotionally available to the extent that I'm like, I'll call you on the phone and I tell you how I feel about something. But to like name a challenge that I'm facing and that I need help, that's much harder to do. And I think this is one of those situations where I think she could have done better. I think I could have done better. And unfortunately, we're not friends anymore. But I will say after that experience, I was afraid to lose any other close friends. I only have a handful of y'all. And I was just like, okay, maybe just check in, do a landscape analysis, make sure everybody's good, make sure the communication. Seriously, friendships mean everything to me. So it was really devastating. I'm still not as devastated as I was on day one, but it's still really sad to think about. Mm-hmm. And I think about that person, and I still want that person to be well, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One thing I want us to talk about before we go, and you hit on this a little bit, was like the language that we use around friendship, right? Me and my thing with the F word, but also like who's a bestie? Can you have more than one bestie? You know, there's the level between, I guess it's friend, then bestie. And then there's like a level on top of bestie where like your friends become family, like, you know, brothers, siblings, sisters, et cetera.
Ride or die, where do you whatever. Land? Yeah.
All of that. Yeah. Where do you fall on the language piece of it all?
Yeah, I think the language is really not important, to be honest. I do think that this is one of those things that differs so strongly from person to person. And even the words mean different things to different people. So I don't spend a whole lot of time on that. For me, it's about how I feel. It's almost like an analysis of like how open my heart is, I guess. And this sounds really like fluffy, but that's kind of how I think of my own relationships. So I think like my besties, ride or dies, whatever, these three people are tip top up there for me, including you. And then like even like my husband is like one level down. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm just
okay,
like
I'm being honest.
You know, I do think like there's something, I know a lot of people say that just because you've been in partnership or in relationship or friendship with someone for a long time doesn't mean that that's a signifier of how close your relationship is. And that's absolutely true. But in my case, it is. I do think that these three people, all people that I've been connected to 12, 13 years, and I've been in my relationship with my spouse for 8 years. That's my nigga. Don't get me wrong. You know, I signed the dotted line. Okay, I got legal claims. But my relationship is different. And also, I think I'm able to exist differently in that relationship because I have y'all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know who I would be in this relationship with my spouse if I didn't have these foundational relationships with the three of you. And that existed before he showed up, and he's just going to be okay with that. Like, it just is what it is. Like,
and we love him. He's great.
That's really important, too, that you guys all have a loving relationship. Yeah.
Yes, he's amazing. I risked COVID.
Here we go.
To come to your wedding.
Here we go. I will say this. Like, and you said that on the pod. You said it multiple times. But I will say, you traveled the furthest. You and I your did. Partner at the time, y'all came from cross country. Yes. To stand outside with me. And I appreciate y'all for that.
And it was beautiful. It was a beautiful, beautiful ceremony.
And you looked amazing.
It was so good. It was such a beautiful ceremony. Anyway, okay. Well, thank you so much, Bianca, for engaging in this conversation with me. I'm sure the girls, the guys, and everybody else in between will have plenty to say. We want to hear from you all, of course. Hit us up on social media using the hashtag FantiFam. We're on the Twitters, the Instagrams, and allegedly the TikToks, okay, at FantiPodcast. Coming up, we are going to get into our dishonorable mentions. Bianca's got a few of her own. BRB.
Hey.
Hey, it's John Moe. Join me on Depresh Mode for conversations on how mental health shapes our life. This week, David Sedaris with stories of his late father that he's finally willing to tell.
I think there's a difference between, you know, a good person and a good character. Like, he was a good character, my boyfriend here. And my father was another one of those people. He was a really good character. But he wasn't a good person.
Depression Mode with John Moe, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Jesse Thorne, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have a special announcement. I'm no longer embarrassed by my brother, and me. You know, for years, each new episode of this supposed advice show was a fresh insult, a depraved jumble of erection jokes, ghost humor, and frankly, this is for the best, very little actionable advice. But now, as they enter their twilight years, I'm as surprised as anyone to admit that it's gotten kind of good. Justin, Travis, and Griffin's witticisms are more refined, like a humor column in a fancy magazine. And they hardly ever say bazinga anymore. So, after you've completely finished listening to every single one of all of our other shows, why not join the McElroy Brothers every week for My Brother, and Me?
Welcome back, beautiful people. We are again going to pass our listener feedback segment because next week, Jared is back live and in color.
Finally,
well, not live for y'all.
Period.
Come on, reference. This is why we friends. That is why we friends. Okay. So we're going to get to our listener feedback next week on an all listener feedback episode. So now we're going to jump right into our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories, the people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out either for their good or their foolishness. Bianca, you've got a few here. Take it away.
Absolutely. So first, I want to give a shout out to Naima Cochran, who is the creator and curator of hashtag Music Sermon on Instagram. It's hashtag Black Music Month, and I've been getting my life in deep nostalgia. So basically, it works like this. She put together a prompt for every day this month in June, and folks are posting their favorite songs that matches the prompts, but it has to be Black artists. And a favorite so far for me has been, what's a song that everybody loves that you hate, to which I posted Savage Remix.
Wow.
I know.
The anti-blackness. Ooh, she hates black women.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Okay, that got really crazy. But I know the blasphemy. But I really love the idea in theory, the Houston link up with the two of the baddest women in the game. But really, let's be honest, like, call a spade, Beyonce doesn't add anything to that song.
Girl.
Shout out to Megan Thee Stallion. It just
wasn't
giving
for me.
They are
going to find you, girl.
Sorry, Hive, don't come for me. This is why my socials are private. My second honorable mention is for Simone Lenora, who works as a personal assistant for the ridiculously fine Hot Cocoa on a Winter Monday.
Yes.
Mahershala Ali.
Yes.
Recently, she posted a video on her TikTok account that went viral, to which they were answering a question about whether or not personal assistants who work for actors actually go on set when they're working on a project. They basically answered in the affirmative, but I thought it was really great to see kind of how they connected to each other, how mutually supportive their relationship is. She even made some jokes about, like, who would fan him and who would put on his socks if I wasn't there? And he laughed it off, and you could tell it was a very collegiate relationship. And he said, which I think is really, really valuable and worth noting, that having her there has become a necessity for him, and he's really appreciate their working relationship. And I think that was really, really significant. You don't, there's so much to be said about, like, the quote unquote, like, talented 10th and those who make it and those who don't. I think it's so significant for someone in his position to say, this woman, this black woman helps me to be the best, helps me to be the person that everybody else loves and is a fan of. Now, I will say, because black people don't like having nice things, people were insinuating, you know, what might or might not be happening in their relationship. Mahershala is a very married man and a man of deep faith. I don't think
deep,
it was
deep
all of that.
Faith, honey.
But I'm just saying, you know, because black folks always trying to find something. But I would convert for him if you wanted me to. But my dishonorable mention is for one James Patterson. You might have seen this floating the internet from USA Today. But basically, he was talking about how you don't see many 52-year-old white males like himself getting writing contracts these days. And, you know, Black Twitter came for him and read him down. I want to highlight one Twitter user who I really related to, at GinaD129 on Twitter. And she wrote so brilliantly that USA Today publishes a bestseller list of over 150 entries. The day that Patterson made this ridiculous statement, all but 9 people on that list were white men, including the Viola Davis. Dead white men were just as statistically likely to be on that list as living people of color. So just want to say, like we always say, get out of here, white man. You don't know what you're talking about. go sit down somewhere.
No comment. My honorable mentions. I'm going to first give an honorable mention to one Lizzo.
Yes.
She released originally released a version of a new song that she has called Girls, G-R-R-R-L-S. And, you know, I guess the disability community, disabled community noted that a word that she used in one of her lyrics, you know, could be considered an ableist slur. And Lizzo, you know, the queen of accountability, I'm now calling her,
absolutely,
was like, heard, completely understand. She re-recorded, you know, or she released a new version of the song with that lyric changed, and kind of, you know, took responsibility for it. And, you know, the fact that she did a new song or at least a new version of that line, put it out, right, to me was just like a good sign of, like, you know, the type of accountability that we say we want from folks when they make, you know, various infractions. She didn't just apologize. She also, like, took some action behind it and, like, changed the song. I thought that was really interesting, and so I wanted to shout that out. And then I also, again, y'all know I'm not above shouting out my own self on my own podcast. And so I am giving myself an honorable mention because...
Toot, toot.
All right. On the day that you all... well, on the day that we are recording, which means 2 days ago when you are listening to this, if you are listening on Thursday...
The day it drops.
I turned in the second draft of my book, and period, big purr. And so y'all know I have been dragging myself toward these different deadlines and finish lines. And so every time I hit a deadline, y'all gonna hear about it. And so I just did.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Bianca. Well, you know, I should say while we are recording, I have not actually sent it, but I will have sent it by the end of the day because that's the deadline. So technically I got to 11:59, but it's done. It's done. I just haven't sent it. Anyway, okay. Now it is time for Black History is Happening Every Day. And of course, y'all know what it is. The one, the only, Jennifer Hudson. She EGOT it this past weekend. If you don't know what that means, because I had discovered that a lot of y'all don't know what it means to EGOT, okay? EGOT, it's spelled E-G-O-T. It represents Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony, and a one Jennifer Hudson. Yes, okay? A contestant from season 3 of American Idol, the season that a one Fantasia Barrino won. Jennifer Hudson is an EGOT. I believe she's the 17th person.
She is.
To EGOT. She's the second Black woman.
Yes.
To EGOT after Whoopi Goldberg.
Correct.
And she EGOT it for, she got the Tony for being a producer of a play on Broadway, a musical on Broadway by Michael R. Jackson called A Strange Loop. She got her Oscar, obviously, for Dreamgirls, where she played Effie White. She got her Grammy for that fabulous, I believe it was her debut album, okay? Not for the song, but the song was on the album. I don't like...
Ooh.
Yes! Come on, Bianca!
Living
and then she got...
Spotlight.
Period! And then she got her Emmy for being a producer on an animated series. And so y'all know I rides for, you know, in the words of a one Monique on the iconic classic film Fat Girls, a thick madame. Okay, I live for a thick madame. And, you know, shout out to Jay Hud for being amazing
this
and killing
time,
it as usual.
Effie White wins.
Period.
Okay.
Period. Period. Oh, also, a slight honorable mention. Not even a slight. Another honorable mention. I'm doing it last, y'all. I'm sorry because I just remembered. But I do want to say that tomorrow, the day after you all are listening to this, if you're listening to it on Thursday, is the last show of the Wendy Williams show. And y'all know we have talked about her at length here mm-hmm. on this very podcast. And it wouldn't be right if I just did not acknowledge that it will be the last show. I don't know what they're doing, if they're doing anything special for her, but I just wanted to mention that. And before we go, Jarrett is hosting the Vision Awards tonight. Tonight being Thursday, June 16th, if you're listening to it, for the Stonewall Community Foundation. He's hosted the award show for like the last 5 or 6 years or whatever. Obviously, the last two have been virtual. So do me a favor. Go to whatever social media platform that you have that he is on, at Jarrett Hill on Twitter or Instagram, and just send him some love. Tell him some good luck. Let him know that we are sending him good vibes. He probably won't see it until after, but that doesn't matter. It's the thought that counts. And you can tell him that I sent you. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Bianca, thank you so much again for being here.
I'm so excited. I can't believe it happened. I can't wait to listen to this, guys. I'm such a fan.
Before we go, if this conversation piqued your interest and you want more of this,
good, period.
You can check out another episode that has a related conversation. I'm going to suggest that you check out episode 30 titled My Brother's Keeper or Nah, featuring Seth Brundle and Dr. Charles H.F. Davis. Those two guests are really close friends of Jarrett's, and so you can revisit a conversation about friendship, sort of, by listening to that episode. And now it's time for the credits, beautiful people. As always, if you like what you hear, share it with somebody. Tell a friend, okay? We are always trying to grow the show, and you are our best support in being able to do so. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, any other week's show, we're at Fanti Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, and on the TikToks. You can always use the hashtag FantiFam, or you can send us an email at FantiMaximumFun.org. Our music is brought to you every single week. You know it, by the one and only Corece. That's Core.ece. All right, our graphics are done by Ashley Wynn and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative. Our editor is Will Hagel. And Bianca, you're going to do, I hope, the horns this time, okay? You ready? Our producer is Laura Swisher! Fabulous. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
He's yep. Yeah.